I am unashamed. What about you?
But some of my kin folks over from Caddo Parish asked me, did I want a lab, young dog? And I said, will the dog retrieve a duck? Is it full-blooded? Is, you know, oh, yeah. Oh, he'll retrieve. Said he hadn't been trained, but I've just taken him hunting. Like dummies, sit, stay, kennel, he's all good. I said, well, these boys I'm hunting with, my own flesh and blood, have been griping and complaining for the last decade because Blue, my prize lab, come out of good stock, a little high strung. Was the greatest retriever I ever owned, but he had one flaw, and I will have to admit, it was a big one. He was a whiner. I tried everything known to man for a decade to get that dog to just shut up when he's seated in front of me. We're waiting on ducks to come out and start working the plugs. So I never succeeded in shutting him up. He was a whiner. He was born a whiner.
Yeah.
And so I pawned him off and told old Burly Dane Jennings out of Colorado. He duck hunts with us every winter. He just moves in, you know.
He retired. Your old dog basically retired. And moved to Colorado.
Retired him. He went to Colorado to live out a nice little life. Old Burl did it because he thinks he can tell people he's my dog, therefore the connection with me, and he might win him a little few bucks, you know, sell some puppies or whatever.
He sees opportunity here.
He sees opportunity.
But I think it's the only good thing about this in the spirit of the resurrection is basically it was time to put off the old self and create a new self. But since you couldn't baptize Blue, he had no concept.
That's right.
So,
well,
the next best thing is you send him a pasture and get another one that looks just like him but acts differently.
One of the reasons why we're there, ladies and gentlemen out there in computer land, one of the reasons that I believe in a God in heaven, and I believe in his son, Jesus Christ, and I believe in the unseen power of the Holy Spirit. One of the reasons I believe in God, Jace, is that when he made animals, and in this particular case, dogs, it is amazing how these dogs, they understand the English language.
Somewhat.
You can say, you can train them. When you say kennel up, he will get in the kennel.
Yeah.
When you say load up, you let your float, your tailgate down on a wheeler, you say load up. He knows what load up means. He goes,
but you could say mowed up and he would do the same thing. So I said somewhat, because if it just sounds like it, he will do it.
But my point is they were put here and they know how to carry out instructions.
Yeah.
They really do. And it's pretty interesting. Now, I'm just saying that. You can take people who love horses and around them. They come up with some amazing things about what they can do with horses. Burley's wife is a cowgirl. She goes up in the mountains, and she's got a trail of horses, and she trains them. She has them bred. She raises them from little coats and all that. She's into horses. But a dog can do some amazing things as far as go getting your ducks. Just think about it and bring them to you. To save you the time of walking, getting out of the blind,
but going. They weren't created with the drive to retrieve the dogs that we have.
That's right.
They have, like my dog.
It's innate.
My dog, Biggin, he always is thinking, I must retrieve something.
Yep.
But we only have hunting season 3 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So now what he does, every morning, he does the same routine. He gets up, he goes, and because Willie has a golf course in his yard, so he goes and finds a golf ball and he brings it back, and he doesn't give it to me because I don't want it. And then the rest of the day he will take the cover off that golf ball. Then at night when he goes to bed, he goes over because Willie has tennis courts and he finds a tennis ball. Now that he eats
Yeah, that's what I call Jace. He has that dog.
Yeah,
he has some deep issues.
No, he wants to go get something, Phil.
Yeah, well, and he doesn't know what
he wants to go get it.
Yeah, he'll have problems with him. But anyway, so my cousin brings over this dog. He said, "I'd like to give you a dog, Uncle Phil." I said, well, the dog retrieve? He said, the dog will retrieve. I've taken him duck hunting, but he hasn't been thoroughly trained, like with a whistle. The whistle training, ladies and gentlemen, is when your dog retrieves or a duck falls, boom, and a duck falls over there at 70 yards in the brush. And your dog did not see that, just happened to miss that duck, didn't see him in the air. Now, dogs are pretty smart. They're watching these ducks when they're flying around, and they're waiting on us, boom, boom, boom. When we shoot one of them, the dog sees them fall, and he goes out there. In Blue's case, if you shot four, boom, 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 four fall. Well, Blue counted them. He looked out there, and he went, okay, I got four on the water here. Because he would go out there and pick up one to come back. I wouldn't have to tell him to go back. He'd hand me one and go back again. He knew there was some more out there. He'd go get the next one, and the next one, and
He's hunting. He's watching.
He's watching. Yeah. But this dog had not been trained, because if you shoot a duck and the dog didn't know where the duck was, the dog's sitting there waiting on your command. Well, I'd call his name, Blue, and he hits the water. He'd swim about 10 yards. He doesn't know what he's going, but I've seen him, so he's thinking, there's a duck out here somewhere. I wonder where he is. Well, you blow a whistle, and he turns around. He's trained to turn around and look at you, and you're fixing to give him some instructions. So he turns around, looks at me, and I point my hand in the direction. I'd wave to the right. I said, Blue, and I'd blow my whistle. He'd look at me. I'd send with my hand. He hand signals. Well, he saw which way I pointed, and he'd take off. Well, he'd get out there about 60 yards, and he's veering off a little bit. He's veering off. I blow my whistle again, and I'll take my other arm, and I'll say, nope, here, and over. Well, when he hear over, he said, okay, I'm going too far. And you can just coach him, and he'll go right on out there. He'll pick up the duck smell when he gets close enough, depending on the wind, and he'll go out there in the thicket, and he comes back with your duck. Well, if you do that for
years,
30 days, 40 days, 60 days every year, he's constantly doing that.
All right, they get better.
He learns fast. He said, I know some ducks are down. I wonder where they are. But I got to obey my master, because when he says over, that's where that duck is. He'll lead me right to him, and he begins to trust you.
But ultimately, his problem was character and manners. The price was too high. But what I'm trying to tell you is, he just wouldn't do it on your stuff. But what you didn't know is he would jump over in our wheeler, and nothing ever changed in the course of his life. He looked for people and things to show bad manners.
No.
And
he looked for people he knew who didn't like him. That'd be you and Stone and Cy.
Yeah.
Well, y'all spoke ill of my dog. He heard that. And every time he got a chance, he said, here's what I think about them.
Maybe.
On their bag. He didn't pee on my bag, Al. He'd pee on Jason's bag. He's saying, you disrespected me, and here's what I think about that.
You know what you know what I got to say? I hear he's pulling a sled in Colorado.
So you outlaw Josie
Wales. So his replacement, his name, by the way, and he said, just think of my cousin said, just think of Drew Brees. His name is Drew. So now, instead of Blue, we got Drew.
How ironic.
Kind of rhymes.
And my point is, either one of them would come if you said either name.
I checked him out this morning. Yeah. I walked up to him, Al, and he's in the pen. And I said, Drew, first night with me, my man. How's it going? And he wagged his tail, and I put my hand through the wire there, and I just gave him a little boost this morning. I said, good to have you. Well, I look forward to working with you. And I was basically telling my dog how it was going to be.
You know what I noticed? Phil said, here's the new dog. And he got out, and there was a pile of poop 3 feet from him. I said,
expect the dog to spend overnight in a pen and not take a dump?
My dog waits till I let him out, and he goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I took that as
Leave him in there long enough, Jace, and he'll take the dump.
Possible sign of trouble.
I have a feeling the dog wars have just resurrected, speaking of the resurrection. I had a comment. So labs, y'all may not know this, are used frequently by counselors. I have at least three counselor friends I know. They have a lab. The lab is in the room. They're counseling some person that's distraught. Maybe it's a marriage situation, whatever. And a lab, primarily, I guess there's probably other dogs too, has a sense about what's going on, the tension in the room. And so the lab, people have told me this, will come over and just kind of nudge their head next to this person who's like telling what's going on in their life, whatever. Maybe they're crying, maybe they're upset. And it's just by nature, they want to calm the situation, and it works. These counselors tell me that it's amazing how much more relaxed people are when that dog is in the room with them. So we talk about it just from a hunting sense, but you know, the Almighty put something else in. You were saying earlier, Jace, about man's best friend. Dogs are unique in all the animal world and how they relate to human beings. Yep. And so it really is interesting that he has that in him too, or she, this lab. So it's more than even just getting dust.
That's one of the reasons I have faith in God. I just look at the animal world and dogs especially, and I'm thinking, you know, I said that they're pretty unique animals. I love working with them. You know, I'm glad, you know, if you get one like Blue, whine too much, you know, it get on your nerves. You know, you're trying to, you know, you got ducks working, and right. So he's whining. But this one here, he's not a whiner, so that's a good thing.
That's right. Let's take a break. So I hadn't had to borrow any money in a while, Dad, so I wasn't sure exactly what you need. And one of the things I realized, you got to have a good credit score. We talk about one of our sponsors, ScoreMaster, quite often on the podcast. And it really can be the difference in getting a good deal, especially getting a low interest rate. I found that out. Lisa and I have used it. It helped us to get the Southern Layer, which is where I'm coming from today. So, you know, basically they can help you get 61 points in 20 days or less. But also we found out you can get up to 33 points in just a few days, which is a game changer, and it was for us. So you want to check these guys out if you're going to borrow some money for, you know, a house, boat, you know, whatever, ATV. Check them out. ScoreMaster.com is where you find these guys, /Phil. ScoreMaster.com/Phil. It's simple. It's easy. It takes about 1 minute to enroll. You can find out where your points are. Start bumping it up. Save you some money. And the other question I have before we leave the dog topic is, so you mentioned eating the tennis balls. How does that affect the digestive tract? Because I'm thinking
tennis balls would not be good. He throws it up, and then he starts barking for me to come let him out of the pen. And so I'll come out there, and he's like the Bible passage that says, as a dog returns to his vomit. Because then he just reprocesses. But he's wanting to get out because it was a traumatic, you know, a tennis ball. But they come up every morning. Missy's like, why do you keep letting him have the tennis ball? I'm like, this is what he does. I mean, if he's going to be dumb enough to do it and he calls that fun, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I would drop the axe on that. No more tennis balls.
Yeah. What's amazing is how he finds one every day. Because sometimes he'll be gone for 15, 20 minutes.
Are there a lot of tennis players around the subdivision?
Willie has a tennis court. I got news for Willie that his golf, the balls he's hitting out in the yard and the tennis ball, my dog has gotten hundreds.
I wonder what happened to him.
Jace took him a few times. He's a lot better on tennis balls than he were retrieving ducks, that's for sure.
I thought he did pretty good. I was happy.
Well, we'll see. Now we got Drew enter the mix. So next year during duck season, we'll have to find out how Drew does versus Bigham. So I thought today we would talk a little bit about kind of jump ahead in Acts to Acts 17. This podcast is releasing on Easter Sunday, which... you know, we talked about the last podcast, how really the whole week is such a special remembrance every year. And the timing that it is during the spring means a lot. And we talked a lot about the cross last time, but the resurrection really is the centerpiece even of the gospel. I mean, literally, like Jace mentioned, the symbols that we use, I mean, right there in the center, we draw a little tomb, you know, from that era when they buried people in the mountains. And it really is sort of everything hinges on that, which is what Paul even said. Every element of the story of Jesus and what he did and him coming here, all of it is important and is the gospel. But I mean, wouldn't you say the resurrection is the core of everything? I mean, everything we believe.
It's the centerpiece of the Bible.
I Googled because I was curious. Life after death, or another phrase I put was life after death without Jesus. Because I just wanted to see, get the pulse on the world. And surprisingly, there was nothing. I mean, most times when you do a Google search, you're going to have hundreds of ideas, topics, the hottest items. I was surprised at the lack of ideas. I mean, there were a few things from years ago about reincarnation and some energy concepts of being absorbed into the grand energy core of life, but there wasn't anything recent, and I mean in the last 10 years, other than people who believed in Jesus. I found that fascinating. Yeah. I mean, is that shocking to you?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Usually there's always a bunch of stuff that people are going to muse about, you know?
Wasn't out there. Most of the stuff were things related to what they would have in quotations was near-death experiences and seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And I read a few documents about doctors saying, here's what, you know, actually, you know, they were challenging more the idea of that phrase, near death. And when you think about it, what does that really mean? I mean, if you were in the sky in a plane, and another plane came within 1 inch of you, but didn't hit you, is that a near-death experience?
Probably so.
Well, what if it came a mile?
Yeah.
The chance is always there.
I mean, the more I read this, I thought every day's a near-death experience if we start applying this.
You ain't lying.
And that's then true. You had the other side of it, which was near-death in that, you know, people say, well, I was dead, and I came back to life because, you know, their heart stopped beating. And then they use these, I don't even know what they call them. They rub it together and
paddles
and got you, kick-started you. And so the doctor said, well, you really wasn't dead.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty interesting that when the Apostle Paul reminded the church at Corinth of the gospel that he had preached to them, he said, what I received, I passed on to you. And this is the only place in the Bible with wordage like this. I passed on to you what I received, I passed on to you. So the Corinthians are sitting there listening. As of first importance, you take the whole Bible and you say, and you have one of the apostles saying, what I am telling you right now, you better receive it, believe it, and stand on it. And remember, it's of first importance, or you've believed in vain. Then he said that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. That's all humans have two things in common. They're all sinful, and they are going to die physically. That's facts. Well, the most important thing in the Bible says Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures, according to the scriptures, over and over and over, that he was buried and that he was raised on the third day according to the scriptures. Everything else is really not as important, according to the Apostle Paul, as the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. He said, on down below that, by the grace of God, I am what I am. His grace to me was not without effect. I worked harder than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God. So whether then it was I or they, this is what we preach. Jesus died, was buried, and raised from the... And this is what you believe. Now check this out. But if it's preached that Christ has been raised from the dead, how can some of you say there is no resurrection of the dead? Well, now we're in Jace's camp when he tried to look on Facebook and bring up the topic. And Jace is telling us now, I've never turned on the internet or the computer. But Jace just said, if you do turn it on, there's very little said about the most important thing in the Bible. You would think people would be saying, you're saying there's a shot at what?
No, my point is
you being raised from the dead. And they're like, you talking to me? I said, I'm talking to you. There is a chance to be raised from the dead.
Yeah, but I'm saying, no, there was a lot about people who believe in Jesus saying you can be raised from the dead. I was looking for something other than Jesus being raised from the dead as your answer for life after death. And what I was saying is I didn't see anything, which was surprising. I figured there would be some theory.
If somebody come along, some pharmaceutical company, and they said, it's a breakthrough. We've had a breakthrough. We have figured out that with one pill, you have one pill. Now, the thing's $10,000, but we have now have it, and it's given us all great results that you can live beyond physical death if you take this one pill. It's 10 grand, but guaranteed you'll come out of the ground. What would you think it would sell, Al?
I think they'd get more than 10 grand for that. Let's take a quick break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated, so I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
So to your point, Jace, in Acts 17, which is, I believe that the passage Dad read was 1 Corinthians 15, 1 through 4, which 1 Corinthians 15 is probably the greatest chapter, if you want to call it, section in the whole Bible about the resurrection. That Paul does that. But, you know, what's interesting is I think the reason why in the setting you're describing, Jace, in our current world is exactly what Paul experienced when he went to Athens. Because in verse 16, this section about Athens starts, when Paul was waiting for the brothers to show up in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. And you got to, you know, think about it. Paul, he was, in my mind, he was sort of like a converted atheist. He was an atheist. He believed in Yahweh. He was a Jew, but he didn't believe in Jesus. I mean, you don't go round people up and kill them because they're following Jesus if you believed in him. And so when he saw him on that road, when he got struck down, I mean, obviously it changed everything, because then he knew he really was resurrected. And so that's why I think the resurrection is so important. But the setting that Jace described in our current culture, to me, sounds so much like what you see here in Acts 17. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I look around and I'm distressed, you know, when I see our culture.
Look, I had this conversation. the last time I had to go do all this stuff for the life insurance, you know, you got to go take a physical, and they, you know, if you're in perfect health, they're like, yeah, you qualify. If anything wrong with you. So, but I said, you know, the guy was like, well, I just want to make sure you have life insurance. I was like, well, let me just explain something to you. Life insurance, of course, I didn't know what this guy thought, but I'm just going to explain this. I said, my life insurance is in Jesus. That's the life insurance. Because what you're saying, this should be named death insurance. Because this happens when I die.
Of course.
And you're calling it life insurance, but I'm dead.
The money doesn't come your way.
You know, I'm dead. I'm laying in a hole somewhere. I was like, you should change that name.
Somebody else is going, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He's gone.
He gone. And so
but the money's really not the issue, but they do find out what the policy says. When you die, the money's coming. Where? How much do I get at you?
But here's what I found fascinating. He had no explanation. He was looking, because I thought, he's never thought about it. Somebody just named it.
He didn't know that free health care was available.
Yeah, but it's a good way to share Jesus. But I just thought, you know, if I was selling something, I would at least try for it to make sense. You're selling me life insurance that's only good that when I'm dead. Can we not name it death insurance? Oh, well, that sounds horrible, you know, because they wouldn't do it because marketing. They were in a meeting and said, Bob, let's call it life insurance. So then the person will somehow think that when he dies, this is a positive.
Miss K might have got me a little life insurance, but I would have never do it. I wouldn't do it at all.
I think you have life insurance, but yeah, what?
But not with my endorsement, that's for sure. No.
Well, but I'm telling you, is it you have death insurance?
Yeah.
It's life for other people who remain on the planet. And my whole point is, that's the way our world is. They don't necessarily have to know it or explain it. Just give me your money and you know, take care of these people over here. But this is how this guy's feeding his family, you know? So I get it. But we're long on, you know, talking about it, discussing it, but we're very short on the practicality of it all. I mean, I did see some searches about space, and because now that's a big thing in our world. Everybody's going to space. Star Trek is back, and they're like, we're going to find the answers to life.
And they're trying to make these robotic machines, Al, where there'll be immortality through the machine. You see what I'm saying?
That somehow maybe you could plant your consciousness in one of these AIs and keep going. That's where they think they're going. But it is interesting in our culture, Jace is right, it's a great point, because the mindset is, and I'm saying this pretty unique to Western culture, that somehow you can attach a monetary value to life or limb, you know? I mean, you have somebody, they lose their arm, you know, in an accident, and then they say, well, here, we're going to give you X amount of dollars, or they sue for X amount of dollars, say, okay, here's what your arm was worth.
Yeah.
And it's the same, I think, with life insurance or death insurance, which I like better. In other words, well, what, you know, you hit $1 million policy. It's like, wow, man, what a life. And, you know, left $1 million to somebody. But really, is that all it's about? Because you go to Africa, they never heard of life insurance. They don't even know that concept.
Yeah.
They probably say, what? Is this going to ensure that I stay alive? That'd be my first response. If I'd never heard of it, they'd say, we're going to give you life insurance. I'm like, oh, you're going to ensure that my life is going to be great. No, this happens when you die. Well, I'm out on that. No, oh, no. So it's their life insurance. I mean, I guess he should have made that argument. At least that would make more sense. Not going to do anything to ensure my life. I'm dead.
But anything, you don't make money off of that.
Anything
concept.
Somebody tries to sell godly principles and make money without letting it affect their heart and life, I always notice. I notice that stuff because it doesn't make sense.
No, that's
to me.
Pretty good. I like that. Let's take another break. So what happens? So he's there, he's distressed. He's like we are. You look at the culture and you say, man, how can they not understand what this is? And then in verse 17, he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace. So I did think it was interesting that in this distress of feeling this wickedness and idolatry and everything in this Greek culture, he went into action. He took that as a saying, well, we got to get in here and I need to start talking about, you know, who God is. And he started with his familiar, you know, former fellow Jews and people that at least recognize who God was. So I did think that was interesting. But then he went even further by totally going out into public. And then he runs into these philosophers. Of course, they say, what is this babbler talking about? But it was really interesting to me because when you get down to verse 18, he says that he was talking about, he was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. So you notice Paul never gets very far, even though he was a brilliant man, from the core of what changed him. And I think that's kind of for all of us today. That's the way we need to live life. That's what we need to talk about.
We gotta remember,
in like Jesus.
One way of looking at this is, I don't know when Aristotle, I looked it up one time, and Plato, these great thinkers were with these people, their ancestors, probably 150 BC to about 300 BC. So these great scholars, Al, none of them had any idea. They had some little Aristotle, you know, he thought maybe there might be something after death or whatever. But there was no Jesus. There was no death of Jesus, his burial and resurrection. Well, all this information kicking around these latest ideas, that's all they had. They had no knowledge of what the Apostle Paul is saying in Acts 17. They hadn't heard that. They'd heard what Plato said, Aristotle said, and this, that, and the other, and they had added a little bit to it. But I wonder if they could have teleported the Apostle Paul into the Greek Empire 300 years before Jesus showed up. He could have at least told them, look, there's a day coming when there will literally be a resurrection of the dead. These philosophers would have gone nuts. Well, that's exactly what they did when finally Jesus appears. Now it's the Roman Empire, but them big structures and all this stuff on Mars Hill, it was all there intact.
Oh, yeah.
But they had never heard anything like what the Apostle Paul said. No. Y'all think it's about gold and silver and all these monuments to this God and that God and this God. He said, ignorance on all of you's behalf. Well, you just think about it, a chastising. And then he says, look, he set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he's appointed. He's given proof of it to all men by raising him from the dead. They never heard that, Al, not once.
No.
Not with Aristotle, not Plato, Socrates, none of them.
Well, because it's defying the metaphysical argument of life, which is some of the things I did read. They were like, well, it's impossible. But I did notice that those arguments, the reason they were having a hard time with it is because they had the resurrection being about your soul leaving your body when you die, which to me would be separation, not necessarily resurrection. And I don't think the religious people have done them any favors, because a lot of people, that's what they believe. They're like, the resurrection is that when you die, your soul leaves your body, period. And y'all have heard this. My point is that when you read 1 Corinthians 15, yes, I believe that happens, but the resurrection is that your body actually comes back with your soul that left your dead body, and you live again, which is what Jesus did. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the hard thing to wrap your head around. And that was the arguments that I read even today. They were like, we don't have a better idea, but we don't believe that can happen. So they're like, the atoms and the molecules do not exist within a soul. So they were all attacking, the scientists were attacking that idea. they never got to, oh yeah, wait right here, because not only do we believe your soul leaves your body, we believe that body is coming back. The atoms and the molecules that literally rot are reignited.
It was knitted together at one time. We're just saying that can happen again.
But they would say, well, but you did that because the humanistic mind.
But they didn't do that.
But that's what they're going to say.
Well,
they're going to say, you know, through conception, you know, the man and a woman get together, and that's the humanist side. It's always going
to
come back to the
just to show
the
audience, I think I've mentioned this before at some point on one of these things, but just so the audience will understand something, I went to Athens, Greece, and I went to Mars Hill, and I stood where the Apostle Paul stood when he gave this little dissertation in Acts chapter 17. We went to the very same spot 2,000 years later. I memorized this entire section, got up on that hill, they turned the cameras on, and I presented Paul's argument 2,000 years later. Now, the hill, you were there, Al, the hill,
yep.
There were people from all over the world. And you
That's
were
right.
there to see their response when they heard when I quoted what the Apostle Paul said. I mean, many of them wept. Did you notice that?
Yep. Oh, yeah. And for people that don't know, so this is just this big rock where this meeting of the Areopagus is taking place. Here we read about, and that's where Dad was. And you're kind of in the shadow of the Acropolis, which is above
yep.
you, which is
yep.
the great temple that had all the gods, in quote, in
yep.
it. You know,
yep.
these statues and all that. So you imagine Paul and Dad did it. He's given this speech and he's pointing up at the top of that Acropolis. And he's like, this isn't the answer. You know, he's giving them what the true thing is. And so when you finished, people didn't know what we were doing because we didn't have like the filming of it was just a couple of guys with cameras, but there were a lot of cameras up there. So you just got up and started doing it. And people were just enthralled. I mean, people got quiet. They were looking, they were like, who is this guy? A few people recognized you.
Deathly calm.
And you did the whole thing. And then some were crying and then they all applauded. And we did it twice, you know, for safety. And it was really interesting because they physically and spiritually, emotionally reacted
they sure
to
did.
That speech.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Which is really intriguing.
Yep.
We all were in the moment of, which is pretty powerful.
There's something about going to these places that we read in the Bible and, you know, we believe this, but, you know, when I've shared this before, but when I was in Israel and we visited that tomb where they said Jesus was in a tomb about like this, and we were in the general area where he was crucified, and they make it dramatic because they know that most people that are going to visit this are believers. So they let you go one at a time. So it's like you make this walk and everybody's in line and it's through a little grove of olive trees and you step down and it's rocky. And then there's a little bitty hole that you enter. And then they have, it's a concrete dungeon with two little rooms and that's the tomb. And so I'm looking thinking, wow, this is bringing burial to a whole new level. You're in a cave. But when I stuck my head out, it's like, all the stars aligned, every worship song I've ever heard hit me at one time. Because I envisioned Jesus dying, being in this tomb 3 days, his body. And then when I stuck my head out, I'm telling you, it was like, this is what I believe. It was
powerful.
A top five moment in my life because I was in Israel. But it wasn't anything I didn't already believe, but there was just something about seeing it done in history, you know, that I'm at the place. I've read about it. I'm now visualizing it even more. And I tell you, it was a spring in my step.
Let's take one last break. Yeah, and that's exactly the way Dad and I felt. I mean, like, being there. And, you know, of course, obviously it was totally different because you look up at the Acropolis and it looked just like it did 2,000 years ago. But sure, you look to the left, and it's millions of people and these just stacked on top of one another, which none of that was there. So, you know, it was amazing because it was a place that had totally changed. And yet this one little piece of it was just like it was 2,000 years ago.
Yep.
And we even commented on that, Dad. Remember, we said, look at all these people that are right here next to where this went down. And I wonder how many of them even know it, believe it, have ever read it, have ever understood the resurrection at all.
They came.
Probably not many.
They came to Mars Hill to see it. And they came to where all these false gods were and the remains of them still being there. People came there. Why did so many of them come there, Al?
Did you figure that out? They're drawn to it, the history of it. But I guarantee you most of them had no idea what you were quoting and where that came from. They just thought, that old guy, that old bearded guy, he's laying something down. But you know, most of them had never heard that before.
No, they hadn't heard it.
Well, and I think there's the world that don't believe, they've already decided a lot about, you know, what they see in Christianity that's not good. They alienate the idea of it and just think, because basically, look, if you believe in this, you believe in a being that holds the atomic and molecular structure of things in his hands. Because right, what's the big deal about believing that he can resurrect you bodily if you already believe he created you from dust or is healing people? And, you know, I mean, the list, we have donkeys talking, you know, we're talking about dogs. Well, you know, my dog all of a sudden said, hey, Jace, you know, knock it off. Well, people said, well, that's not possible. Well, I don't know where that story is in the Old Testament, but, you know, a donkey turned around and said something in a language that he hadn't studied. And so it's not that big a stretch, but I think when you read what Jesus said in John 5, I mean, this was early on, way before he dies and is buried and resurrected. He said, don't be amazed at this. You know, this came because he healed a guy who had been paralyzed for 38 years, which was incredible. Then he goes on to say, don't be amazed. A time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. Those who have done good will rise to live, and those who have done evil will rise to be condemned. I mean, I don't know what they thought when they heard that. Like, does he mean their soul? Or because it's just hard to grasp that even in light of a miracle. And we know that when he died, they all abandoned him. It wasn't like, oh, remember that time he said there's going to be a resurrection? And but they had to see him rise from the dead to really get it. So it is tough for us 2,000 years later, because he's not going to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, remember me? Or, you know, or have somebody, because it is based on faith. And so I realize it's tough. But in light of a simple Google search, if you're just out there waking up every day thinking, this is it, well, no wonder we got so much chaos going on and we got to double the mask. And, you know, you get the coronavirus and you die. Guess what?
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
They're scared to death. So, it is interesting. The God, the Apostle Paul, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth over and does not live in temples built by hands. He's not served by human hands as if he needed anything. He himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made every nation. There's Adam. So all this thing about race and all that, the Apostle Paul said, nope, we all come from the same man. That they should inhabit the whole earth, they did. He determines the time set for them. He does. These empires rise and then they fall and then they rise and then they fall. He decided the exact places where they should live. He did it so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. though he's not far from each one of us. I've always wondered about this, Jace. You can elaborate, or you too, Al. For in him, in God, we live and we move and we have our being. It's some of your own offspring, your poets have said, we are his offspring. And then he goes, therefore, since we're God's offspring, get off the gold, the silver, the big, big monuments and all that. That means doodly squat. We're talking about you can be raised from the dead. So what does he mean there when he says, in God we live and move and have our being? Exactly.
Well, what's interesting is the two groups, the Epicureans and the Stoics, the Stoics believed that God was everywhere. There was atoms and physical laws of the universe. So they had a connection. I think he was speaking specifically to them. The problem is they didn't know this unknown God. They didn't understand what it was. They made the wrong application. They thought they could create their gods, these, you know, with gold and stone and all this stuff. And what he's saying is, look, your mindset about there being a being that's big enough that he's everywhere, including in us and us in him, because we're made in his image. That's a good idea, but you just missed the boat because you don't understand. You don't understand how to apply it. So I do think in the context of the two groups, the other groups, the Epicureans, their deal was just pleasure. They didn't want any pain, and they just wanted to have fun. That was their whole life was about happy and emotion.
Any of that
and
going on in America these days, Al?
Just a little bit, I think.
Yeah, no matter how much time changes and goes by, it always gets down to the same thing. Younger people, which I think those two groups, if you look up, they attracted the younger crowd, which is just have fun. Don't go crazy.
Yep.
But, and then the older group is you have to be civilized and think of the greater philosophies to find true achievement. And, you know, it's all about creating memories, which that's what the world, their biggest thing that drives them in the context of resurrection. I mean, I was watching the NCAA basketball last night, and you know, both teams that won said the same things after the game. We'll go down forever as Final Four. You know, they were throwing that term forever. It's their way to be resurrected with creating a memory. And look, I'm all for making great memories. But if there was actually a way to achieve literal eternity forever, memories that are generated, I mean, if you could keep living, why not just at least consider it? And look into it. Don't quickly dismiss it as all of, you know, when you don't have any other idea. I mean, to me, but to answer your question about what does it mean to in him we move and live and have our being, you know, when I read Colossians 1:15, because it's hard for the human mind to relate to these concepts.
Very hard.
Because we are just trapped inside the body. And look, you can be talking about the resurrection and or be on cloud nine about some spiritual revelation in church and then immediately go out and be just as earthly and temporary as the guy who doesn't even believe. I mean, it happens every day. But when you read Colossians 1:15, when he talked about Jesus as the image of the invisible God, by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether these thrones, powers, rulers, authority, all things were created by him and for him. When you digest that, it then is not too big a stretch for the next verse to say he is before all things and in him all things hold together. So you take God out of the earth, which is, you know, what are they going to do with all this space travel? They're looking for meaning. They're looking for a way to extend. When what they don't realize is, find me a planet that has water first, because we're the only planet that has that, and life, and then we'll talk. But we're so far away, by the time you get there, guess what? You'll be dead. And so then that more Colossians generation. 1, he gets to the church, which is us, and the whole reason he created us, and we have the life and the reminders, and you see all these things during springtime and this time of year, is he did that to plant in your mind, I'm life. I am life. Yeah. I don't decide to live. I'm not going to give you life. I just am life. You get with me and you live.
It's hard to get around it, Al.
Yeah, it is. Well, we got to run. We're over time, but we'll kind of finish this thought up on the next podcast and talk a little bit about the application of what a resurrected life looks like in terms of how we live. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.